Hello, welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have on the phone Mr. Ross Toro. What is up, buddy?
Everything is cool, Jason. How about you?
I'm good. Now that we've worked out our little technical difficulties, we've got the podcast up and running. A couple of old dudes trying to figure out the kids' technology is what's going down here. So we're making it happen. I brought Ross on because are you there, buddy? Ross Toro?
Yeah. No.
Are you there? Okay.
Was that me or you?
I don't know. I don't know. The beauty of it is that we're just going to leave that in the podcast because I know you're pressed for time and we'll just roll on forward with it. All right. So let me introduce Ross. Ross and I have been training in martial arts at Screama, particularly. We worked on some boxing stuff and some different internal arts and things like that for many, many years. We've known each other for what, like almost 10 years now or more? Something like that. So we actually met much like my friend Scott, who I had on the last midweek show. And we met with while training with GM Nene Gabukayan of the Balintawak system in Los Angeles. He teaches out there and he's a fantastic teacher. And Ross is one of his students. And actually now you are teaching of your own accord, right, with him? And you're helping out with a lot of the classes and stuff?
Yeah, I help him out with new students and things like that. Okay. So it's, which is actually part of the learning process of, well, as you know, it's better. You learn a lot more teaching than it is getting fed like that. Because then you have to think for both yourself and the student receiving the techniques.
Yeah, that's so true. Because I mean, it's like you have to think of both sides of the equation, the attack and the defense. You got to be able to explain both, and you got to be dynamic and engaging at the same time. It is that's like the next level for sure. So exactly. I want to just talk a little bit about your background. You don't have to, you know, go into like too many details, but how did you first get, started in martial arts? Because really what we're going to talk about today in this brief thing, Ross has actually got some appointments and stuff pretty soon, so this is going to be a pretty short show, but we wanted to talk a little bit about training, mental training, and some of the attitudes that you need to be successful in, and you know, in life and in martial arts. So anyway, your background a little bit, how did you get started in martial arts? Where did you first start, and when did you first start?
Well, I had a 5-page thing about my background, but I'll skip that.
Yeah, I bet you did. And let me just dig that out real quick and I'll start reading. In 1981, Ross began his meteoric rise to the top in the martial arts world.
I was born.
Yeah, you were born in 1981, weren't you, buddy? you and me both.
Actually, I got my start in Kung Fu. And I think a lot of kids, you know, it was a little bit pre Bruce Lee. So I learned Tien Shin Pai in Maryland, where I grew up, under Dennis Brown and Master Willie Lin. So that was my basic.
That's like the foundation where you started.
Yeah, the foundation, which is like a Northern Shaolin style.
Okay.
A lot of kicking and things like that and weapons.
Okay.
So I was there. I was there for a while until I broke my hand.
Oh, geez.
And then my mom said, well, maybe you should think about it because you're an artist, so you might
not want to break your hands, for instance.
You need your hands to draw.
Yeah.
So after 6 months of healing, I said, nah, I think I want to go back.
There you go.
It's not going to happen again.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and you know, and then I met other friends through that and, you know, dabbled in some more Chinese martial arts. I somehow was drawn more to the Chinese style because, I don't know, I resonated more with me than other arts, even though other arts look intriguing to me too.
Yeah.
But let's see, the second part that I got interested in was the Filipino martial arts.
And which... I will share with the listeners that your background, ethnically, you're a Filipino. So this,
right.
Yeah. So did that resonate with you? Cause it was kind of like, you felt like it was in the blood and in the culture and stuff like that.
I grew up in the States, and, you know, growing up, I saw Chinese martial arts, Japanese martial arts, Korean martial arts. And I'm going, hey, man,
when you were a kid, right? You saw that stuff in the movies and all around and in the Kung Fu magazines, just like we all did, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I saw actually Guru Dan and Bruce Lee. And I said, wait a minute, that's Filipino martial arts. That looks pretty cool.
And for those listeners who may not have seen that movie, what was that in?
Wasn't that Game of Death?
That was Game of Death indeed. It was in the pagoda.
Yeah.
That's where Guru Dan was. So
remember Enter the Dragon with the double sticks.
He used double sticks in that too. But that was actually from what he had learned from Guru Dan, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, which is super cool. And that was, I think, most people's introduction to Filipino martial arts, even though they didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah. Little would I know that, you know, how many years after.
Yeah.
But I actually, you know, met Guru Dan, and he's
well, now you guys have been working with him, right? I mean, he's training with GM Nene and the group up there at Barnesdale Park, right?
Right. Exactly.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a nice circle there.
And I know you've got, I don't need to get into the whole history, but I know you have more than 20 years of you know, Filipino martial arts under your belt, probably more, and multiple different styles that you're familiar with. But, you know, now, I mean, you're mainly working with Balintawak, right? That's your main.
Right.
Okay. And that's a style, I talked a little bit about this in the last show, but that's a style, it's a very popular style, a very effective style, and I'm obviously both of us are partial to it because we both studied it, but but it is also well-respected in the martial arts community and well-sought after, and our teacher in particular, GM Nene, is known as one of the finest martial arts teachers in the world. He's one of these people that kind of flies below the radar, though. He's not a self-promoter. And oftentimes the great teachers, you know, the great grandmasters are just like that. And so people don't know about them until they're gone, which is unfortunate. So, but let me point this out, that the cool thing is GM Nene is, you know, and people like Ross who are training with him and stuff, or who also teach and are moving into doing that stuff themselves. You know, the lineage is still quite alive and still there. And you can get, you know, you can get that today, which is super cool. So.
Exactly. And he's not that far from, he's only one generation from the founder. So,
yeah, and that's huge. And what I was going to say, though, is Balintawak comes from Cebu, right? Mm-hmm. And the main founder and founders, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. The founder is Ansyong Bakon, and he was with the I hope I'm saying it right, Labangon Fighting Club, which was in Cebu, which included the brothers, the Cañete brothers from Dos Ipares.
Dos Ipares, so, yeah.
Yeah, and that group is where Balintawak came from. You know, as with most organizations, after a while they tend to fracture and go their own way. So,
sure.
Ansyong Bakon decided, you know, instead of the double sticks or the knife and stick, I'll just stick to single stick and use the empty hand, you know, my way. So that's kind of how that evolved.
And, you know, Filipino arts, for those who are not that familiar, share a lot in common, I would argue, and maybe we're the precursor in some ways to like a sort of form of what we know today as MMA, right, Russ? I mean, you've got like boxing, wrestling, judo, different Aikido moves, stick fighting, knife fighting, all kind of mixed together in a very practical way. You know, people don't you know, now we don't see a lot of that, you know, the real practical stuff that, I mean, this is basically super training for street fighters, right? I mean, these guys were living in dangerous conditions. I mean, people were literally getting attacked with knives, machetes, and sticks all the time in the Philippines back in the day. No, I mean, it was right. dangerous, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, these techniques have been used since, I guess, the dawn of whoever was there first, because they, as with most arts, well, I shouldn't say that because Japanese. It might be a little different, but you know, the FMA, Filipino martial arts, you know, have a lot of influences that from China, from Japan, from Indonesia,
sure.
and you know, all the pirates and people who traded with the people there, they, you know, of course, traded more than just goods. They traded techniques and
knowledge and ideas. Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
So it's kind of neat that it's still evolving, and you know, now everybody's picking up everybody else's techniques and see what resonates or works for them.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, it resonated so strongly with Bruce Lee, because Bruce Lee's philosophy, you know, martial arts was very much in line with what Filipinos have been doing for hundreds of years, in that you take what's useful for you, adapt it, and you discard what isn't. It's almost like I was thinking the other day about how Filipino arts and Filipino culture is so strong and it's so powerful because it's been colonized and mixed and met and visited by so many different types of people. And the Filipino people there take a little bit of something from each one of those people and learn from them. And then they adapt it. It's like, mm-hmm. like in the sense, I, you know, and it was right. funny because my last name is Napolitano, which is mm-hmm. Italian, obviously. GM thought I was a Filipino when he first encountered by name.
Well, Italian at heart.
He did, right? But he was like, we have Napolitanos in the Philippines. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So it's like, you got a little bit of everybody there. And Filipinos have such an interesting way of like adapting all of those pieces. Like, you know, like you go down to, for example, like you'll have some food at like a Jollibee, which is a Filipino fast food restaurant. And, you know, there's this specific sweet spaghetti and fried chicken. And obviously those are not native, you know, to the Philippines, but they've been adapted to the taste of the people there. And you know what I'm saying? And that's a good lesson from Filipino arts, is to take the things that you learn and adapt it to your own self, your own needs and your own abilities. Right.
Right. And you know, the Filipino martial arts also were influenced not only by other Asian arts, but also European arts who visited. So it's kind of a neat thing that you can sometimes trace certain techniques, certain styles.
Well, you might see fencing from France, right? Or fencing from Italy, or different types exactly. of those ancient European arts, right? So
right. So it's kind of like a melting pot in a way.
Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of what, you know, in the beginning, I didn't know much about Filipino martial arts, only that, you know, you hit two sticks together and hopefully you don't get smacked in the hand or the head.
Or cracked above the eye, like has happened to me exactly. two or three times.
Yeah. And so, you know, you bounce around trying to see what kind of style, you know, fits with you. But, you know, originally I actually, and this goes back to the Chinese arts, I actually was kind of trying to find healing arts, which led me to the internal arts. Mm. And, you know, the healing arts are also a big part of the Filipino martial arts, although not many practice it.
Yeah.
Mostly, I know Virgil Apostol, he's an author and he has a book or two about
I love his book. That's one of the lesser known aspects of the Philippine arts, as is the idea, and we've talked about this a lot, you know, personally between us, anting-anting. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's a concept of a protection or a talisman or some sort of object, the power that protects the holder or the user of it from attacks and from death or from harm. Anting-anting, right?
And right.
That's one of the really interesting aspects. And a lot of times there's different forms of it too, which I've found really interesting. Some are more natural, like some people will find a stone or they'll find a particular pebble or maybe there's like a magical operation where you've got to get a black cat bone or something. I mean, I've heard all of these different types of tales. And you've got also like the undershirts with the different talismans on them and different images and so on and religious mm-hmm. images that protect the person that's wearing it and stuff. And those are really interesting aspects of the Philippine arts that, you know, not too many people hear about. You know, one unfortunate thing about martial arts these days, and this kind of happened, I guess, when they reached the United States, it's much like happened to yoga, is it became strictly a physical culture type of thing. So it's like, mm-hmm. or a self-defense thing. And we've almost kind of lost some of the connections to the internal, which I'm glad you were talking about internal there, and to the spiritual connections of martial arts. People just think it's violence, and the violence is the least important aspect of the art in my mind. I mean, that's right. The sort of business end of it. The rest of it is like, this is the spirit, is the intention, is the will, is the mind, the mental aspect of it that you bring into it, right? And all mm-hmm. that stuff.
Exactly. Now, I mean, from the multiple arts I've learned, I think it comes down to communication between two people, whether you're fighting, whether you're talking, whatever. To me, I mean, my teacher, Master Wei Lan Choi from the Lui Ho Ba Fa system, he's in Chicago. I think he's retired, though. He taught me the importance of, I mean, probably the other arts before that showed me the importance of listening to your opponent. But he actually was one of the first ones who showed me how important it was to not only listen with your ears, but listen with your eyes, listen, you know, for your opponent's intent through your hands and through his eyes or whatever.
It's like an intuitional listening.
Exactly. And it was the way he taught it and the way he applied it made a whole lot of sense. So it was eye-opening for me that somebody like that can kind of basically read what I was going to do. Because at that point, I had a few years already in martial arts and also FMA. So I would try to stab him a couple of times, in a drill.
Not for real, in a drill.
Not for real. And, you know, he was able to read, you know, my moves.
Your intention,
so,
in essence, right? Your intention.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's okay.
Sorry.
No, go ahead,
so,
please.
Yeah, he was very, and that's what he wanted. He knew I was interested in, and that's what he kind of like basically showed me, is like, how do you read your opponent without getting too excited about, well, you know, when you're fighting, you got many things going on.
Yeah.
And somehow you have to find a way to calm everything down.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about finding that center or that meditative state or that, it's almost like you find like the calm in the middle of the storm, in essence, mm-hmm. right? You're that still point in the middle of it. So I wrote a book about meditation, and you know, I've been meditating for many, many years, and that's one way to develop that. Another way is some of the exercises that you do in internal arts, right?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he actually, all the forms we learn, he called them moving meditation. He said, if your mind is too busy about what's going on, you know, over there with the other people in the room or the fly on the wall or the bird up in the sky. And he said, that's not going to work because you have to actually be mindless yet mindful at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough because it's hard to get your rational mind to wrap around that. But that's the thing, is you're trying to get your rational mind out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're using it when it's necessary, but you're operating more on instinct. And it's like, you see that in these grandmasters, and you see that like with our teacher, GM Nene, when he's teaching, when he's engaging with students, when he's dynamically working with people, he'll have someone throw a strike at them just indiscriminately. He'll have someone, let's say he wants, okay, just throw a strike at me. And you watch how he reacts, and it's like, it's kind of magical. It's like he's tapped mm-hmm. into that place where, like, the intentionality of where they're going with that strike and what he needs to do and all these different factors, the angle, the speed, the power at which they're delivering, all this stuff is being computed like in nanoseconds. And, you know, it spontaneously comes out in some kind of a move that's genius, that he might not have even thought of up until that point. It's coming out of himself, because you'll ask him like, well, how did you do that? And he'll have to go back and think about it. That's the level that we're trying to reach, right? In our martial arts, it's like a spontaneous good move comes out of you because you've trained so long with so much focus and so hard, but you've also let go at a certain point, right? And you're not worried about it. You're not tense. Tension is the enemy of spontaneity and the enemy of good athletic performance in any realm. Would you agree with that?
I think so. You can't be tight and expect to do anything good.
Yeah, no. I mean, and that's the same in life, in art, in writing, whatever. It's like a certain grim, tense intensity towards like whatever you're trying to do kind of kills off the freshness. It doesn't mean that you don't have an intent, and it doesn't mean that you don't bring power to it. It's just that you're not bringing attention. There's a difference. Yeah. It's very subtle. And I think that's what those internal arts and if you're not familiar, we're talking about Qigong, we're talking about Tai Chi, we're talking about talk about more of those arts, because you're more familiar with those internal arts than I am. Some of the other arts that you've taken, the internal arts, Bagua.
Yeah, Bagua, Xingyi.
Xingyi.
The Lo Hong Ba Fa system has all of those integrated in it. So it was actually difficult to kind of incorporate the internal with the external, because you know, at the same time, you're moving your body, making mm-hmm. sure the joints move together, the arms move together, and stop altogether. So everything is connected. Master Choi would always talk about body mechanics and how important that is to internal arts, because if everything moves at different paces, you're never going to be able to connect. But if it's connected, you're able to move your chi through, you know, whatever technique that you're doing, which, you know, after a while you're going, oh, yeah. I punched the guy and it was effortless, yet you could see your target move, even though he's, 210, 220 pounds. And you're going, oh, okay, it actually works.
Yeah, exactly. And that's that, you know, that's that internal energy that you develop that gives you that power that's beyond just mere like muscle power. Although that's huge. Obviously, the physical side of it is important as well. But I think that once you kind of get to a certain level of technique, it goes beyond that. And even, you know, even with boxers, with MMA guys, with, you know, combat sports artists and so on, I think most of them will tell you, like, you know, when you really start getting up to the upper echelon of performance, it becomes a mental or spiritual endeavor. Like your will to win and the focus that you bring to it and the mental attitude of being a champion takes you, moves you ahead. And that's the thing, like, even when you're beginning in these arts, you want to start to develop. And this goes, I think, for any sort of art. It could be, you know, it could be yoga. It could be, you know, painting or drawing. It could be martial arts. It could be, you know, anything. And it could be a new business, right? You need to develop that right attitude, that concentration, that focus, and then that freedom from tension in order to really maximize your learning. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of athletes call it being in the zone, even if they haven't done any internal or anything, that somehow the inside is connected to what's happening outside.
On the outside.
But the effort just flows. It's nothing is fake. It's, you know, in its purest form, you're moving, thinking, and reacting as one.
What's a simple way that people can develop that habit in their practice? Be it, like I said, be it art or golf or tennis or martial arts. What's something that you can think of that you can, you know, kind of leave the listeners with so that they can, you know, develop that focus in whatever they're doing? Like just kind of a couple of offhand things that you can think of that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think for me, it's mindful practice. It's like if you're a boxer and you're doing a cross, well, you could do that all day. But if you're not thinking about the technique and how your body moves, and if you don't have in your mind's eye, okay, my opponent is in front of me, I want to be hitting a certain spot, I think it'll take you longer and it'll be less effective when you try to use it if you're not practicing mindfully. Because if the physical and the mental are not connected, it's, you know, you kind of get a watered down or cheaper version of what you could have had.
So to build that that mindfulness, something I think that people can do, and you know, you can add to this or disagree, but one thing I think is focusing on the breath while you're working and keeping the mind on the internal process of that breathing, and then connecting that to the exterior. So it's sort of a connection between the internal and the external world. Would you agree? And
yes, I mean, if you use your breath, you're able to know when to expend that power, and when to draw in your breath and collect power. So after a while, it becomes natural. I mean, like Master Choi would say, you know, the babies are like perfect internal machines because they just do it. There's intent. And if you know, he used to say, if you notice a baby grabbing your finger, there's not like, I'm going to squeeze it, but it's still, you know, they squeeze it and that's it. There's
pure intentionality. And,
yeah, exactly.
And you know, what's funny is babies are incredibly strong for their size.
And we kind of lose that after a while because we got too many things going on in our heads.
And it's interesting also, at the same time, babies are unbelievably supple and pliable. And yet they're strong. And there is something like, you know, they talk about in Taoism, like becoming like a child again. You know, Jesus even talked about you have to become like a little child again in order to, you know, see the kingdom of heaven, right? It's the same kind of idea, is that you got to get that freshness injected into that mechanical way of living. So I think that's a great point. Thank you. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you have stuff to do today, but I greatly appreciate you coming on to the Cosmic Eye Show for our little midweek deal we're doing now. Ross Toro, master martial artist.
Thanks, Jason. I hope to see you soon, dude.
Thanks, brother. And thank you for joining. Well, actually, thanks again, Ross, for coming in. Thanks for joining us, everybody who's listening to the show. Please support us at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. And have a great week. Goodbye and God bless.